We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
The wait is over for the NHL. They have found their way. They have found a plan that both players and owners have agreed on to get back and get to a Stanley Cup postseason, hopefully by the end of July. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. We're excited. In about 10 minutes, we're going to talk to Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, about all the things that they have agreed to, and maybe one thing they haven't agreed to
again,
that we need to talk about again.
All that's been agreed to is the format, and the union, by a 29-2 vote, agreed to the format of 24 teams in the playoffs. Nothing from the health and safety or the money side has been officially agreed on. I haven't said it hasn't been talked about, and that's obviously some of the things we'll be asking Gary Bettman.
But they're further along than most of the other professional leagues. They're further along than all of the other major sports in North America. And so I'm curious how they got there, how they managed to do it with very little fanfare surrounding most of the process, and what's next. The important steps that are going to get us back to playing pro hockey in this and in North America.
Golic and Wingo again, presented by Progressive Insurance. So we have a real path forward with the NHL. We're delighted to talk to Gary Bettman about that in a few minutes. We have no path forward in the sport that's supposed to be playing right now, and that would be Major League Baseball. You know, for a long time, we'd heard about a revenue split that the owners were proposing with the players after an initial agreement of a prorated salary. We had Ian Happ of the Cubs on with us last week, basically saying, we haven't seen anything. Well, they saw it. They got the proposal yesterday, and let's just say it was not in any way, shape, or form what the players thought they were signing up for.
Very interesting. So basically, it's like a sliding scale. We'll make this as easy as possible, from the lowest paid to the highest paid. Remember, the players in March agreed to the prorated version of their salaries, meaning you get paid for the amount of games you play. So if you had the lowest amount, $563,000 contract this year to play. If you played in 82 games, you would get $285,000. That would be your prorated. Well, Major League Baseball came with a sliding scale that said, okay, you lower paid guys, you're going to keep most of your money. Your higher paid guys, you're not. So that same example, if you make $563,000 under the players prorated when they agreed to in March, you'd make $285,000. Under the league's new proposal, instead of that 285, you'd make 262. So you lose a little more, but not a ton. You lose $23,000 more. Now take that all the way to the highest paid, which would be Mike Trout. Mike Trout at $37 million. So if you prorated his salary the way that, again, the players agreed to in March, it would be a little less than $19 million for about half his salary for the 82 games. Under the new proposal by the league, he would get $5 million. So instead of the prorated $19 million of half the games, it would go to $5 million with this sliding scale where the more you make, the haircut you take. And that is a big, big haircut. So there is one player that did say, well, at least a sliding scale is better than the 50-50 revenue split owners had floated out there as well. But this sliding scale may be a bit too much.
Yeah, and this is something we already heard. There was a statement released last night from the Major League Baseball Players Association essentially saying they were disappointed in this first round of negotiations. They're far apart on this. There's still some differences with the health and safety portion of things as well, which had been another thing that had been sent over to them, that 67-page memo of health and safety guidelines going forward with the league that there were some questions about. And so it is difficult. This is, like the rest of this negotiation, we talked to Carl Ravage about this, something that mimics history with Major League Baseball. Very public disagreements between ownership and the Players Association. Very ugly at times in the way that it's done, meaning these numbers are thrown out to try and make the players look bad and greedy when they come back and say, no, we don't want to agree to this right now. But it is just the first round of a very public negotiation, and I thought our own Jeff Passan framed that pretty well.
I see a first offer that went too far. And I'm not sure what the calculus was behind this offer. Listen, first offers are always going to be a little bit outlandish. That's what negotiating is about. And I think we have to understand that. And it's why today I'm not sitting here saying there's not going to be a Major League Baseball season. The big question, Scott, is how the Players Association is going to respond to this now. Are they just going to sit back and say, you know what, this doesn't even warrant us coming back to you with a proposal? Or are they going to use this and say, now that we have all of our players working together, now that we have the force of them behind us, we're going to go and ask for what we want. And we're going to go and try and put the pressure on Major League Baseball, knowing that the league ultimately, like the players, wants to play baseball games.
So, by the way, Jeff encapsulated that perfectly. Here's my question to both of you. You know, we sort of, when we talk about baseball in this, well, this is the way it's always been done. As Carl alluded to, this is the way baseball has always gone about it. Why are they going about it this way in this time? That's the thing that I don't get. Everyone else is understanding this is a different scenario. Things are different. We never thought we'd be in this situation where basically sports shut down because of a pandemic that swept across not only the nation, but the globe. And every other sport is realizing, we got to try and find a different way to do things and make sure we find a way to get to a common point. Why is baseball saying, nope, this is the way we've always done it. We're going to do this and make you guys look like the jerks.
How has any other sport done it differently than they've normally done it is my question. You don't, which sport has operated that differently? The NBA has had a great relationship between its NBA PA and Adam Silver. That is still shining through here in a way that's pretty normal. Hockey has operated and has done it largely and not paid attention to over the course of this and was able to fly.
It's also been very acrimonious between the NHL and the NHL Players Association. Remember, they shut down a season once.
Sure.
They canceled the season.
What has the NFL done so far that's all that different from what we'd expect? They've got the benefit of time and space, so we don't really know at this point. That's an uncertain sample.
We don't have to worry about that.
College football is defaulted to what we've always talked about. This tends to circle around money. So I don't know if anyone's behaved all that differently. It has been the relationships producing the same problems in a different environment. And for Major League Baseball, it has been something that's built up. And this is recent, too. This isn't just the far back history of strikes in the 90s. This is the last couple of years of these off seasons marred by angry players looking at the way that free agency has gone for them and staring up at the people that were a part of this agreement for them and wondering what the hell's going on. So this is a recent bubbling. We don't have to go back all that far in all of this, but I think it's everyone you're seeing the benefit of leagues that have put themselves in good positions relationship wise between players and management, having those things, the people who have the benefit of time benefiting from those things, and a league like Major League Baseball operating largely business as usual.
But that's my point. I guess have an ounce of understanding of the current situation we're in, right? And I think Rob Manfred went on CNN in that town hall and basically said, hey, owners could stand to lose $4 billion. So he certainly understands that part of it, that obviously we're in a financial situation that's very desperate. I just don't understand why they're being, both sides, both players and owners, are being so public about this in a situation where they're never going to win by saying, well, look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing. How about you just try and find a way to bridge the gap instead of going down the way you always do things? It doesn't seem to make any sense.
It doesn't, but I guess I'm just saying I don't feel like any league is acting all that much different than they would normally. So, I think we're seeing the problems that come up for everyone. They're just being magnified right now. We're flushing the pipes in the way that you expose a lot of these issues.
So what happens now? So we got to talk about moving forward with baseball. What direction do they go? As I said, there was a player that said this is better than a revenue split. So what can we expect from the players? And I think as I was been reading and started thinking more about this as well, how about the possibility of, because what are you going to go back with? You have to go back with something, right? Unless you just ignore it completely and come back with your own proposal, or you just say whatever we signed in March stands. So what do you do? Do you agree to a small haircut, right, but defer it? How about that? How about you defer it so the owners don't have to spend the money now, and you wait till, from an economic standpoint, your sport comes back, to which it will. It's just we don't know the time frame to that, but we believe it eventually will, and you defer it and collect your money at a later date. That way you don't lose all your money, you don't get it right now, As we've seen, we've seen companies and them do pay cuts where people aren't getting that money back, but you defer your money. You take less, whatever you're owed, you take a percentage of it and the rest of it or whatever is deferred. And then you wait till you're economically sound and you get that back. I don't know. I'm trying to go take the next step. You know, we all don't like the way it's going on, especially to the way it looks at public, but what's the next step?
Well, we're still waiting for the first step, actually, yeah, for them to try and figure out. We have the next step in
hockey.
We are past the first step in hockey. And for that, we're delighted to be joined by NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. Gary, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. Less non-acrimoniously, for lack of a better term, did all this come together with everybody plan that will work and get us back in playing playoff hockey?
First of all, it's good to be with you, and I hope everybody's doing well. There was no acrimony at all. This has been a collaborative, cooperative endeavor. I believe our Players Association and our players were committed, as were we, to trying to do everything possible to re-engage with the game and to re-engage with our fans. And we all had a common focus of how do we make this work.
Again, it was a 29-2 vote by the union to approve of this format. So the format out of the way. We have two other, as you I'm sure know, a couple of big hurdles, health and safety and the money side of it. Start with either one you want. Where are you in those other negotiations?
Well, first of all, everything we were focused on started with health and safety, the health and well-being of our players, our other personnel, and obviously the communities in which we play. But for us, health was a two-pronged focus because the first was obviously the pandemic. But for us, the second was getting the players back into game-ready shape. Our guys generally don't go this long without skating. And we and the players agreed that the players were going to need to tell us how much time they thought they were going to need once they could start working out, which is why we have this in phases and we're leaving the time a little loose, because if the guys go back when we open our training facilities, which we'll probably do the first week in June, they'll give us an indication pretty soon as to how much time they think they need to work out and how much time and when we should start training camp. And then once we get that established, we can then move on to playing. I've heard, you know, and I know you guys have been discussing the economics in other sports. Our economics were never an issue. We have a system that's been in place now for almost 15 years. We paid a pretty high price to get that system installed, but there's nothing to discuss on the economics. We share hockey-related revenues 50-50, and they are what they are. You know, there'll be some discussions about moving the timetable of free agency and salary arbitration and when we ultimately hold the draft. There may be some discussion about, you know, how to repay the escrow and things like that. But we've been in a very jointly focused collaborative process. And I'm delighted that the players and the Players Association have been so engaged.
Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, with us here on Golic and Wingo. And so before we get to what's next, I just want to focus on what you mentioned, the health and safety that's at the forefront of all of this. You certainly mentioned giving guys ample time and rollout to get back into the shape they need to play safely in all this. But we know so much of the focus is on testing. I know you guys have a ways to go before you decide on the hub cities that will host these events. But once that is in place, what are the testing policies that then follow for everyone in those spots?
Well, players, as they go back to their training centers, will get some testing. In training camp, there'll be more testing. Our medical people are advising us that once we come to the hub cities, players need to be tested, if not every day, at least every other day. And part of where we go, which hubs we pick, will be a function of how much COVID-19 is in that community, but also the availability of testing without interfering with medical needs. And our advisors are telling us that by the time we get to the summer, there'll be enough testing available in abundance in this country that our needs, which will probably be somewhere between 25 and 30,000 tests, will be a infinitesimal amount of the amount of testing that will be available overall. So that shouldn't be an issue. At the end of the day, we've decided that, and it's the reason I haven't made an announcement and we're considering a number of seasons. If you focus on one place, you're putting all your eggs in that basket, and whether it's a breakout or a resurgence of COVID-19 in a community or the availability of testing or Lord knows what else, by having the options we have in any one of those cities that have been named can probably host us, when we have to make a decision, which is probably another 3 to 4 weeks, we'll be able to make a real-time decision with the best available information at that time, and we want to make sure our options are complete and numerous.
NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman with us as he unveiled his plan yesterday to sort of get going and have the Stanley Cup in a 24-team round-robin playoff tournament, 1 through 4, different than the 5 through 12 seeds that made the postseason. Seven teams did not make the postseason. We've heard the dates, late June, getting back into training camp, by July, maybe playing some games. If that's the early window, how long is the window? What dates are we planning on and thinking about how far we might be having to extend to finish up the playoffs?
My guess, my thinking, more than a guess, is we'll be in training camp at some point in mid-July, give or take, and we'll be playing in the summer and probably into the early fall. And to anticipate your next question, based on how we've reviewed everything, we don't have to start the 2021 season in October. If we slide it to November or December, that'll be fine, because it's clear to us our buildings and our communities can host our games into the summer. This isn't like the old days, you know, 100 years ago when our arenas didn't have the ice making or air conditioning capabilities we have now, which, historically, you know, winter sport, New England, northern U.S. and in Canada, and you were being, reactive to the weather. We play in Vegas, in Arizona, in Florida, in Dallas, in Southern California, all year round. It's not an issue. So if we have to slide, but our anticipation is we're going to have a fully scheduled 2021 season. We'll take a break when we finish the conclusion of 1920, and then we'll start up on a timetable that makes sense. And the beauty of what we're doing is it's collaborative, as I've been saying, with the players and the Players Association. The plan we unveiled was a function of the players telling us what was important to them, what issues we needed to address, and we tried to do that collectively as best we could.
Gary Bettman, NHL Commissioner, joining us, and great anticipator of next questions as well. Thank you very much for that. We don't have to ask that one now. And maybe, Commissioner, this is the former player in me thinking about games that still would have been played. There was a couple of handful of games left in the regular season. Seven teams are done with their season. What about, is there any pay for those guys, or is the season just done for them?
We had to make a decision, and we did this jointly with the players as well, as to what made sense in terms of bringing players back and getting them at this point into game ready shape. It's the reason we went to 24 teams, because you guys know our competitive balance is so extraordinary. We have lots of clubs in the playoff hunt until the last few games of the regular season. We had 189 games left to play in the regular season, and there were a lot of teams on the bubble. So we made the decision as to what made sense, how we could create a tournament that was fair and had integrity, because the Stanley Cup champion deserves to be acknowledged as a true champion. And that's how we came up with what we did. We're going to do the lottery, which for the large part is implicated by the seven teams that didn't make the cut. And that we'll do on June 26th. And sports is always about the competition and who gets to move on. And again, it was a tough choice, but we tried to do what was practical and made sense. Listen, no matter what team you're a fan of, you can find something in this overall package that you might prefer be different. But when you look at it as in its entirety, it really holds up as being fair and having integrity.
Commissioner Gary Bettman of the NHL with us. No question. It's always about competition, and you are the first of the big four, for lack of a better term, in this country to have a plan and put it in place to move forward. And when you were rattling off where your teams are coming from, and you mentioned the air conditioning and all that kind of stuff, you mentioned Canada. Obviously, you are a sport that has teams that are going to have to travel and cross borders. How much conversation did you have with the country of Canada about this plan?
Actually, we're in discussions now because Canada, we believe we can get all of our players back to their home markets. There may be a need for quarantine for 14 days at this point, but we're considering a number of Canadian cities for the hubs. But what we can't do is go from training camp and then quarantine for 14 days again and then start up. So unless we get some relief at the border from the Canadian government, we won't be able to use any of the Canadian cities that have been and are being considered as a hub city, and we'll have to do it all in the U.S. Our hope is that by the time we're actually getting ready to make the decision, we and the Canadian government will know more about what will be necessary in terms of quarantining. But the Canadian government's been advised that this will be an issue for us because, as I said, there are a number of Canadian cities, Vancouver, Edmonton, Toronto, that are anxious to be a hub city. But unless we can figure this out with the Canadian government, that won't work.
I'm curious, and the hub cities certainly present those challenges. You mentioned the testing that'll be a part of everyone that's in those hub cities based on how the outbreak is in that area at that particular time. But I'm also curious then, you get to that point, and even if you're testing every day, what happens if there is a positive test? What would that then trigger?
That is a good question, and I could have anticipated it, but I thought I'd have to answer. What our medical people are telling us, and whatever reaction we have to a positive test will be determined by the medical people. They're telling us one test, player goes into isolation. It shouldn't shut everything down, especially because of how much we're testing either daily or every other day. Beyond one test, if it looks like we have an outbreak, then obviously this won't work at that point. Our hope is we don't get to that point because, first, we're bringing the players back to work out in their training facilities, and there'll be some testing. We're then going to be in training camp, and then there'll be more testing. By the time we bring everybody together, we hope that we'll have a population of people, players, and the other personnel that are pretty well COVID-19 free, and it shouldn't be an issue when we bring them together. And we're going to, when we go to the two hub cities, in effect have mini bubbles where we're going to keep players and personnel in hotels, some of them very proximate walking distance to the arenas. We may be, depending on where we go, quarantining the staffs at the hotels. And so we're going to try and create a bubble. But it's also one of the reasons that we're considering a number of cities, because if we go to a place where the community has more COVID-19 than some other places, then that creates a greater risk. So what we're trying to do is minimize the risks to the extent possible. We're realistic enough to know that there'll always be some element of risk, no matter how hard we try and how hard we're managing this. But again, we'll be guided by what the medical people tell us will be appropriate if, unfortunately, we get a positive test or tests.
Commissioner, we appreciate your time. We're up against it a little bit right now, but I was just curious. I know it's early stages for this probably, but has there been any conversation about fans and when they might become part of the conversation again?
You know, our assumption is that we're going to be concluding the 1920 season without fans, based on everything we're hearing. Because, again, while the medical people are going to be determining what we do, so will governmental authorities. And, you know, we'll do some fun things around the broadcast of the game. To make them more interesting than just an empty arena. But I think everybody should assume for all sports for at least this summer, you're not going to be looking at fans as much as we can't wait to get back with our fans.
And again, we'll see what happens about that one going forward
right.
If the next season is pushed back. Gary, we appreciate the time this morning. Congratulations on being the first one to figure this all out.
Well done.
And we look forward to seeing the Stanley Cup hoisted at some point, either late this summer or early in the fall. We're excited about it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. And I wish you, your colleagues, your families, and all your listeners health and safety. This is an unbelievable time, but we'll all get through it together.
We certainly will. Thanks, Gary. We appreciate it.
That was great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Listen, you got to give them a lot of credit.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of moving parts, and we're talking about teams in different countries. They managed to figure it out, so good for them. All right, coming up next, is golf about to get a new tradition that is truly unlike any other? And what is the biggest lie in golf? We're going to get to all of that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
So we know the NHL's got a plan to come back. That'll be end of June and into training camps and hopefully start the Stanley Cup round robin playoff tournament maybe late July. We think the PGA Tour is scheduled to come back in just a couple of weeks with the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth at Colonial. So for more on that and all things golf related, we're delighted to be joined now on Golic and Wingo by Max Homa, PGA Tour professional, won the Wells Fargo Championship a year ago, and renowned swing roaster on Twitter. We'll get to that a little bit. Max, thanks for being with us this morning. We know you got up early. We appreciate it. First and foremost, as someone who does a lot of dissections of people's swings, what did you think of the match and specifically Brady and Peyton's swings?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me on. Tom's looked pretty. It didn't work. It made me feel a lot better about myself in general because he does seem rather perfect. Peyton's, you could tell he had some fusion or something because it didn't move all that great, but he sure hit it well. But I thought the match went great. It was a ton of fun to watch, and I'm really glad they did it.
Max, you play obviously on the tour, so you play in the pro-ams, and these pro-ams are usually a lot of celebrities you get paired with as well as other people. In these things, when all of a sudden these celebrities are hitting with pros like you, do you often see them somewhat melt in their swing?
Well, first off, I think the celebrities get paired with like the other golf celebrities, so I'm not quite sure I play with a lot of them, but I see them on the range here and there. You can tell they're a little nervous. You know, you'll talk to them here and there, and they'll talk about how nervous they are. And to us, you know, it's just a Wednesday. It's like the least pressure-filled day of the week. So it's kind of funny to see these, like, you know, big-time guys like, you know, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Justin Thomas is saying how nervous they are. So that's just a weird – it just feels silly to us, but it means that golf, you know, means a lot. And it was a big spot for them. They raised $20 million. I mean, I would be nervous too.
Talking to Max Homa with us, PGA Tour pro here on Golic and Wingo. Was any part of Phil Mickelson's long-winded answers
oh
a surprise
gosh.
To you or anyone else on tour?
No, that was the most predictable one. Phil's an incredibly smart guy. He really does like to explain stuff. I've always joked that, you know, some people can take it negatively. I look at it as he's genuinely excited to explain to you, you know, how to do things, and it shows you how much time he's put into his craft. But, yeah, I mean, I joked with my caddy, he could read a putt for 10 minutes and then tell you it's flat and right edge.
Yeah. I mean, listen, he's the kind of guy you ask what time it is, he'll tell you how a watch is made. I mean, that's what Phil is. Max, look, Tiger and Peyton won the match, but is Justin Thomas the big winner? Obviously, he has scads of game and he's going to be playing golf for a long time, but I would imagine there are networks running up to him right now saying, whenever you're done, sign this contract. We want you on our squad.
100%. JT was the MVP of the whole thing. I mean, I was so impressed. Shocked, obviously, wouldn't be the right word, but he's never done this before. He has spent most of his life just trying to be and being about the best golfer in the whole world, so you wouldn't think that somebody could be able to, you know, jump into a new role so seamlessly. I was really pumped for him. I thought he made the broadcast, which was great, but just so much better. It was fresh to me. I hadn't, you know, heard somebody – like that, do it like that in a while. So that was awesome. I was really proud of him, but I think he's probably going to stick to the whole, you know, making whatever amount of millions of dollars a year hitting the golf ball in the hole for a while. But I think if he wants to when he's 50, he's got something else he could do.
Definitely would pay better right now to keep playing. As we talked to Max Homa, PGA Tour Pro. Also, he gets guys that send him their swing, and he rips them on Twitter. We're going to have you do that to Trey in a moment. But
psyched.
Reality says that golf is coming back, you know, in a couple of weeks. What do you need to hear or have heard that would make you feel comfortable going back on tour as far as the testing and their procedures?
Yeah, you know, I feel pretty comfortable. Obviously, things have changed rapidly from, you know, whatever the Thursday of the Players Championship was to now. So a lot of you know, things have kind of gone in waves. But from everything the PGA Tour has put in place to keep us safe, and all I've read and all I've seen, I think they're doing a great job, and they're going to do a great job. Obviously, I won't know till we get there. Just, you know, how comfortable I feel, but I feel quite comfortable now knowing what they've put in place and knowing how obviously seriously they're taking this. And you know, it's nice to see so much effort being put in for our safety.
It is great to see. It's exactly what you could hope for all the athletes involved in this. And I know it's something that we've definitely made sure to focus on from the standpoint of this show. So we're excited to see the future of that. We're also excited because golf is something that matters a lot to especially Trey on this show. Trey spends a lot of time working on his golf game, which is part of Golic and Wingo's Olympic Trials, brought to you by California Almonds with 6 grams of natural protein. Fuel your whatever day, every day with California Almonds. So, Max, Trey has sent you the video of his swing.
Oh,
we have tweeted
God.
At you also from the Golic and Wingo
God.
Account. So give us your worst. What
Don't
do we got here
back.
From our
Max,
guy?
Be nice.
No.
I'll ease my way into it. First off, Trey, I will give you a compliment. I think slow-mo is very brave because it sure does show all of the flaws. So I'll give you my hats off to that.
Thanks. What a compliment.
I thought it was very on brand with your last name with how much of a chicken wing you had. So I thought that was really cool. And also, the main one, you texted me and said you're a 10. I appreciate that, but I could tell the moment you set up that you were at least a 10.
Thanks. Listen, here's the way I go. Max says I'm perfect. I'm a 10. Oh, it's the way it works for me.
Max, I wish you could see how wounded he was during all of this. You have attacked the very core of his being.
You know, I tried to be nice to you.
Out loud than to write down. So I'm sorry.
You know, I tried to be nice to you. Our friend John Malinger had me FaceTime with you on your wedding weekend, and this is the thanks I get. Appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
So in all honesty, Max, you saw his swing on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being horrible, 10 being the best. So we know it's nowhere near that. Where does this swing rate? Be honest.
No, it's a fine swing. I'd say it's 6 if we're going 1 to 10. I don't
Boom.
Know.
Boom! Take
I've
it.
I've seen Tiger Woods swing it, so it's hard to go too high. But it's good. You have a good release. You move nicely. If you get the face a little more open on the way back, I think it would help a lot.
Check. Face open on the way back.
So Boom. There we go. We know the scale is 10 Tiger Woods, 1 Charles Barkley, and 6 Trey Wingo. So
that's a win for me.
We've got it all ironed out. Max, we appreciate
awesome.
You taking the time to roast our friend Trey's swing and to give us some time this morning, man. Thanks for everything, and we look forward to seeing you back out there swinging it soon.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, guys. Big fan, and I hope everybody's staying safe.
Thanks, Max.
Get out of here.
All right, Max, we'll talk to you later.
It's the one thing about golf. There's so many little things. That's what drives me nuts. I can't think of all those
things.
He's
right on the chicken wing. It is my go-to, just horrendous.
Trey's
going to
spend so much time on the range
God.
Today. No, I can't wait.
Straight to the range, trying to work on that.
Max, change your number because, man, he's going to call.
That is correct. That's the problem. Yeah. He doesn't know. He's going to get all the swings.
He's
going to
send you every new swing video, so I changed this.
No.
I'm going to blow out his data plan. That's how many videos he's getting on this. Coming up next, we'll react to more to what we heard from NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman as the first of the Big Four to have a plan to return to play. We'll get to all of that after this.
All right, without real sports or Trey Swing, we're beginning to treat everything else as a sport. At home, schooling your kids, well, they're probably schooling you with their knowledge, but you can take them in the backyard and you can school them in some backyard ball. All you ballers and couch coaches, you're going to need stamina, endurance, almonds, 6 grams. natural, energy-giving proteins. You can run a clean program. Almonds, they kind of look like little footballs, don't they? Or use them as golf ball markers. We miss you, sports. We love you, California Almonds. Own your whatever day, every day with California Almonds. Back after this, go look and win go.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense. Maybe a revelation here. I've been drunk before, okay? Been sick. Pretty drunk before, all right?
Nick, get out of here.
Nice.
It's Golic and Wingo.
Me too, man.
Sick brag, huh?
Me too.
Way to come clean.
Well. Getting drunk in the basement. Let's go. Golic Wings and Wingo World. Reminding you that if you missed our interview today with Commissioner Gary Bettman, go check out the entire interview on demand in the Golic and Wingo podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. When you're unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet?
So I'll just say, for those watching on ESPN2, you'll see it. Those listening on the radio, I'll explain it. There is a cake on set now.
Cake.
And it simply says, we did it.
Yeah.
Meaning we've been in my basement for a while and we're now live on TV. So we're celebrating really the only way this show knows how to celebrate.
With sheet cake.
And that's with a sheet cake.
Well, we're in your basement, but it doesn't look like your basement. Does anyone else think that's weird?
Well, let me be clear.
I'm just saying.
This whole thing is
we're looking down on Dad's basement.
Let me be clear.
Only it's not Dad's basement. Isn't that weird?
It is weird, but it is my basement.
What are you getting at?
God, man. Do I have to spoon feed everything to you guys?
Pretty much.
Spoon feed the sheet cake.
Go watch Wayne's World one time for me, guys. We just played the song coming back. A reminder, the All In Challenge fundraiser continues to support organizations feeding those in need during the COVID-19 pandemic. They're offering some really cool experiences. The Cleveland Browns are offering a chance to win a sweepstakes where the winner will get to help script the first 15 plays for a preseason game, plus join the team meeting, have dinner with the team the night before the game. 100% of this money donated and raised is going to go to benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate, learn more or visit allinchallenge.com.
So if you truly got to call one play of the scripted 15, what would your play be?
Wasp.
What one play?
Wasp.
I mean, you get to help script the whole first 15.
But I know I'm changing it. If you get to call a play.
Oh, play action shot. Come on, I'm going deep.
Bombs away. Run Wasp.
Second play, I'm doing a flea flicker.
Why not the first play?
Because I want to run the first play.
Set it up.
I'm going to set it up.
You're thinking about this way too much.
You know, analytics say you don't have to set up play action pass with run anymore.
I don't think a flea flicker is play action pass.
It is a play action pass.
It's a trick play.
That's how you say, but it's a play action pass at its core.
But it's basically a trick play.
And here we go.
It's different. It's a little different than a play action pass.
Meanwhile, we had NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on with us earlier, and they laid out this great plan about how they're going to get back to play, and the players were all on board. But one thing we didn't see a lot of in that plan was the economics of it. And we asked Gary Bettman, okay, what about the money side of this? Because that's clearly a huge issue right now in baseball. And here's what he had to say.
I've heard, I know you guys have been discussing the economics in other sports. Our economics were never an issue. We have a system that's been in place now for almost 15 years. We paid a pretty high price to get that system installed, but there's nothing to discuss on the economics. We share hockey-related revenues 50-50, and they are what they are. There'll be some discussions about moving the timetable of free agency and salary arbitration and when we ultimately hold the draft. There may be some discussion about how to repay the escrow and things like that. But we've been in a very jointly focused collaborative process. And I'm delighted that the players and the Players Association have been so engaged.
Essentially, what he's saying is that part worked itself out because we have what we have and then we split it.
Well, it's the difference, and this is the reminder of what Major League Baseball is dealing with right now, is they don't have a revenue split. Right. That's never been something right. that's a part of the equation.
Because that's a salary cap, and that's something baseball has never wanted.
And they don't want any part of that, but you think about what the NBA conversation has been for a lot of us, and we did that extensive talk about how basketball-related income, that account that's in escrow, where players like LeBron James and others may actually have to pay back some of their salaries, because if you don't hit certain points in the agreed-upon basketball-related income amounts, then the players end up owning the owners a little bit of that money because it all pays out of the same pot for them. So for the NHL, it's going to be very interesting. What I'm curious is, because it doesn't seem like, and he said, there wasn't a lot of acrimony involved in this. There wasn't a lot of bad feelings about the players agreeing to give up regular season games that were a part of that. Seven teams being left out of all of this that are now not going to be a part of that process. But they do have the advantage, like the NBA, of having been so far in their season that maybe it wasn't as much of a concession.
And again, I asked that specifically. They went right to the playoffs, 24 teams. So there are seven teams. Their season is over. And basically he said, I'm going to paraphrase, or I'm actually just going to use my words. You got to, you know, break a few eggs and make an omelet, right?
Correct.
Those seven teams basically have lost out. Those players, there was about 10 or 12 regular season games left that they could have gotten paid for. Those seven teams, those guys are done getting paid. So that was just part of this whole thing. As he said, it's the situation we're in. So those teams are done and we go on and economically we do what we would normally do going to the playoffs.
At the end of the day, the NHL was able to do before any of the other big leagues, whether it's baseball, football, because they don't have to yet, the NBA or MLS, soccer, which is supposed to be going, they figured out a way to make it work. That's a big deal.
The other thing that's going to be a question going forward, there's always that, and you ask the question, there's always a question, what if someone tests positive? Because then it always next needs to be, what if multiple people test positive? Because it's always with one, we isolate. But what happens if you get multiple? Then you get into a really tough situation.
And the one thing I will give them credit, and whether it's been with the idea of the hubs or with that idea of him saying, we're going to follow the guidance of our medical personnel, and understanding that is going to change over the time period until we get to this, and they'll adjust that plan accordingly. But he said, we don't really have a definitive plan, at least not one that we heard for, what if there are a rash of tests all of a sudden? But overall, good news for hockey.
Yep.
There's a cohesive plan, and they have adaptability built into that plan as well. So we'll see what happens going forward. Coming up on Thursday's Golic and Wingo, we're going to book stuff like putting stuff on Junior's legs. UFC fighter Tyron Woodley will join us. Mike Tannenbaum with off-season eggs. Oh, the pug is eating the cake.